Glory. Good afternoon. My name is James, and I'm an addict.
Hey, James.
On May 21st, 1999, I was at a funeral, my aunt's funeral on my wife's side, and my daughter was there. And my daughter was there with her daughter, who was less than a year old. She picked her up and put her arms, looked at me and waved at me and kept going. That broke my heart. I knew I had to do something at that point. I didn't know what to do. I tried to quit so many times. I tried to stop using so many different ways, only going to buy one, only going to buy a dime. I'm going to sell some. I'm going to hustle it back. It still always ended up the same way. I still end up blowing $1,000 because one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. So I asked God one more time to help me. Please help me. So I went home from the funeral with some friends of mine, and we proceeded to have the Last Supper. By Monday, I was using again. On that Monday, I asked God one more time, can you help me? Please help me. And funny, all of a sudden, it hit me right in the head. Some said, call your brother. Now, my brother had been in the rooms for 5 years. He had gone back to college, got his children back in his life, bought a new house, and I still couldn't see. And he said, when you're ready, he never made me, but he said, when you're ready, call me. You know, and I used to call him just so I can get a few dollars so I can get a hit, you know. You know, that's the only time I called him, you know. Might see him Christmas, I still try to get him for a hit then, you know. I called him. He was supposed to show up that Wednesday to pick me up, but he didn't believe that I was really wanting to go. So I was just trying to hit him up for some more money. So I called him back that Thursday and said, what's the matter? I said, you said you were going to come and get me. But by Thursday, I was toe up again, you know. So he said, you serious? I said, yeah. He said, okay, I'll be over Friday to pick you up the next day. Well, the next day, by the time he got there, you know, I was out to lunch. I was, you know, I've been using, you know. But he came in the door, he looked at me, said, you high. I said, you right, you know. And so with that, I asked him, I said, well, what are we going to do? He said, no, we're going right now. We're going right now. So he took me out to my first meeting. There was this little group called the Lighthouse Group. It wasn't a large group. It was a small group, a good group. Because it was there for me. The doors were open. When I needed it the most. And I went in there and went into that meeting, raised my hand and said I was an addict. My name is James. I haven't found it necessary to use since that day. That was May 28th, 1999. My first 24 hours was the next, I got it the next day at another group called the Better Way Group. Some of those members are in this room today, still recovering. They haven't found it necessary to use. My brother gave me about $3 in meeting lists. He said, you're on your own. On my own? He said, yeah, you're on your own. By Monday, I had 9 meetings on that list. I took that transfer and the serenity prayer and went from meeting to meeting. I went to as many meetings as I could get to with that $3 in a transfer. And when my brother heard it, he said, man, you got to go to meetings with me now. If you're willing to go that, if you're willing, if you have a desire to stay clean, he said, come on with me. And I did, and I went to meetings with him. He took me out to meetings, and it started clicking. But it clicked the first 24 hours because, you know, we always talk about, you know, our primary purpose. And they treated me as though I was their primary purpose. My Narcotics Anonymous, and many people in Narcotics Anonymous and the recovering addicts in Narcotics Anonymous at the Better Way Group took me to breakfast that morning, 9 o'clock in the morning after the meeting. I named the group the Breakfast Club, because they would go down to Daddy Grace's after the meeting and eat good. But I, you know, my low self-esteem and stuff was kicking in. You know, I didn't have no money. I wasn't dressed well. I had eyeglasses that were all broke up. There were more girls' eyeglasses than were guys. You know, I was like Fred Sanford. I'd go to the secondhand store and look through the box. And as long as I could see, so I'd make sure I didn't buy a demo, I was happy, you know. And that's the way my life was. I didn't understand when he said, "Come on, you're going to breakfast with us." I said, "What?" I said, "But I don't have no money. I'm not that clean, you know, and I'm really out of my first 24 hours. I got a lot of shame and guilt in me, low self-esteem. I'm really down there. I'm at my low point at 53 years of age. And they said, "Come on, go anyway." And they took me to lunch, and they bought me breakfast that morning, and I was so ashamed. I said, "Look, I'll pay you back." And this is what they told me. They said, "No, you don't owe us nothing. But when your turn comes, you have to give it back to another suffering addict." I said, "Where in the hell am I at?" Who are these people? These are not the people I heard about out there or I saw on the streets. It can't be the same people. It can't be the same people who hung on the corners like I did, begging dimes and quarters, robbing, stealing, doing anything I can to get my head on. I said, "This can't be the same people." And as I kept coming back and going to meeting after meeting, I found out they were the same people. That it was possible that I could stop using and find a new way and better way of life. I didn't think that was possible. See, I'm an old dog, and I'm always looking for new tricks. I'm not looking for a new way of life. I'm looking for new tricks, you know. I'm slick, you know what I mean? You know, I know how to make it work. And was coming in and say people here, people just show love to me that and said they would love me until I learned to love myself. Because I did not like me. And I grew up in the city, and I had a good family. They gave me a lot of values and principles. But I was stubborn. You know, I'm a stubborn kid. I'm a rebellious kid. You know, I want what I want when I want it. You know, I used to try to pick myself up. I'm going to be a paper boy. It was good for about 2 weeks, and that's my story. I'm always good for about 2 weeks. The next thing you know, I was kicking the newspapers down the sewer hole and still going collecting, you know. And never paid the man. You know, and my life continued like that, always looking for the easy way out. And it ended up that I ended up sitting in the back of a liquor store, Georgia Avenue and Rittenhouse, which I used to run. I used to give a wine or used to sit behind the liquor store in the same spot and sit on the steps where everybody goes to urinate, right by the old dumpster with trash all over the ground. And I used to give him a pint of liquor just so to get the yanks off of him because he'd be so bad in the morning. He'd feel so bad, and I felt shameful, and I'd slip him a pint of liquor and a pint of wine. And what happened was I ended up sitting in that same spot, punching a hole in a dirty Coke can, trying to get off on a $6 hit. And after I did it, I walked right out there in the corner and started begging so I can give me a half a pint to boost it up a little bit, you know. That's how my story was at the end. So you can imagine what it was when I came in the rooms and knocked hard. I said, "Nah, I was just so beat down, but y'all just said keep coming back." And that's what I did. I just kept coming back, and the things started getting a little better. I took some suggestions. I never listened to nobody. I don't take any suggestions well. And sometimes a day, because of my control issues, I have to watch out because I still don't listen too well. But this program has worked for me. It's worked for me. I don't know about anybody else, but it's worked for me. And I figure if you're sitting in here, it'll work for you, or it's going to work for you, or it is working for you. It's got to be one of those things, because that's why you're in, or you're looking for something to work for you. And I found it out here in Knockhart. And I'm saying, I just kept coming back. I was a loner. I was a guy who could be by himself, get high by himself. And that's a terrible guy. Because when he's by himself, he doesn't accept nothing from anybody else. He had no suggestion, nothing to touch him. You by yourself, you just don't care. You know, I had the house on the hill and a wonderful family with the fireplace in the basement and the garden. My understanding had blessed me with. And all of that went shot to hell. Had another house, cars and everything. Working, doing good, but something happens, I snap. And after a while, with the progression of this disease, there was no comeback. So 15 more years, after 15 years before, and now it's 15 years of crack cocaine. You know, it's crack cocaine every day. So I lose my wife and family. I come home and they all gone. They even took the toothbrush. They did not care what happened to me. So as good as I am, I go home to mama, my enabler, and stay there with her for a while and turn her house into a crack house. This went on for a while. And like I said, until I saw my daughter with her daughter, something broke. But what broke was the first day I walked into Narcotics Anonymous in actuality. That was something happening, I don't know. There's to walk in the doors and never to pick up another hit again. I never thought in my wildest dreams I'd ever stop using and find a new and better way of life. I didn't know I had something to give. I had something to offer. I had something that could help another human being. I didn't know I had these things in me. I wanted to be that way, but I couldn't get there. I just couldn't get there. And so that's why service is so important to me. I've been in service since day two. You know, I took that coffee pot making position. I learned they used to love my coffee at first because I had everybody wired up. I ain't know how to make coffee. That meeting would go off the hook, boy, and everybody would be saying, "Get James make the coffee." And, you know, but I enjoyed that. I became I've done everything. I became a secretary, a treasurer. You know, the most important thing, I got honest. And I got honest with me that I needed some help. And that was hard for me to do, was be honest with myself, you know, and another human being. I found myself out there talking to a guy, meeting after meeting, we out there on the steps, and I find myself lying, bragging about something. I said, "I ain't never do none of that shit. Why do I have to lie now? You know, that's my problem all my life. You know, it just seemed like something just smacked you upside the head." And I said, "Why am I lying? It doesn't matter." And the guy knew I was lying, and he just looked at me. And, here again, I'm shamed again. I did it again. You know, and that's the way I felt, but I didn't go use. I didn't go use. I went to another meeting and shared about it. And shared about the point that I lied. I'm not a very honest person. I hadn't been an honest person for a long time. And it's still there. I like pens. There's something about pens. You know, I still got, you know, some of that in me, you know. But I still go to meetings every day. They say meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make it. And that's what I did. I have a sponsor. I mean, I've been obsessing about sitting up here for a couple of months now. And when I was asked, the first thing I did, I mean, not too many times, I go right to my sponsor. I went right to him. I said, "Man, look, what is this? They want me to speak here at the convention." And I said, he said, "Yeah, you got to give it back too. I don't care if it's your first time. You still got to do it too. You got to get outside yourself and get in here and become a part of this thing." So I can't sit back there and play the game and just enjoy and sit back there on the back and just enjoy everybody. You know, he gave me some work to do. But I've always been involved. I've been on the H&I subcommittee since my first 30 days in Narcotics Anonymous. I joined that committee. They psyched me out. They were going, the same people from the Better Way group. Stop laughing, Donna. The same people from the Better Way group said they were going to this meeting. And so you follow the people that you see what they got and you want what they want, and you know you want to follow them. So I followed, and I said, "Where does this meeting at?" He said, "Up on Peabody in Georgia." I said, "Nativity Church? Yeah, okay, I'll be there. What time?" 3:00. I said, "That's close. I don't even have to use the transfer. I can walk up there." I didn't know it was going to be an 8-9 meeting. I thought it was a regular meeting. You know, I'm sitting in there, and I'm going to be with the people who have shown me a lot of love. And it gave, given me a lot of hope. And I ended up on the H&I subcommittee. I've been on that subcommittee ever since. I still carry meetings. I'm still a panel chair. Because you know why? I'm doing just what they say. Give back freely what was given you and no strings attached. And man, what it does for me down in here. What it does for you down here when you help another suffering addict. I'm telling you, when you sit up here and you be shaking, you remember when you used to rock in the rooms, and I remember shaking and rocking, and I'm confused, and I don't know what's going on. You know, it's good that somebody comes out and came out and helped me. Somebody took me to the side and carried me through this thing. I have a sponsor. And my sponsor, the first thing he said, he wasn't my first sponsor. I should have been my first sponsor, but I thought he was too young. Up in my head again. He ended up being my sponsor anyway because my high power had another idea. He ended up being my sponsor, and the first thing he asked me was, how was my prayer life? How's my prayer life? It's cool. It's cool. So he didn't say too much, but every day he would ask me, how's your prayer life? I said, it's all right. He said, okay. You been in a meeting today? Yeah. How's your prayer life? See, I had to understand there was a higher power involved in me. You know, I had to, what they say in the song, I got to give myself away so he can use me. And that's what this is all about. I had to get this self-centered James out the way so I can be in God's will and do the things that he wants me to do in his will. It's not easy for me. I'm still stubborn, still controlling. But every day I get just a little better. Every now and then a little bright light shines to say, oh, man, I'm all right today. You know, I didn't cuss nobody out. You know, I didn't get mad at the guy supposed to be doing his work. And you know, a lot of positive things. I've learned to be more compassionate and understanding with other people. And I've learned to be patient and try to be kind and considerate. I wasn't those the ways when I was using. Again, I want what I want when I want it. You know, I've managed to stay here this 12 years. I've been blessed with being able to serve in subcommittees, a policy subcommittee for DCRE. I've been chair of that a couple of times. I've been in the vice chair now. I've been chair of the area. I've done some things in Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to continue to be in service because that seems to be my niche. You know, it seems to keep me clean. It keeps me doing something with people and being around people trying to do the same thing. Stay clean one day at a time. When you give back like this and you see all these people working in the hug squads and all the people that are involved in putting this together, and they do it out of love because they don't get paid. So it's got to be something more to it than just throwing on a convention. It's got to be a purpose involved. And when I look at what they're talking about in here today, when they said, what's this about today? To share our gratitude. And that's what I'm doing. I'm sharing my gratitude for what God, Narcotics Anonymous, has done for me and for my family and for my friends. That little girl came over one Christmas and I didn't have no money or anything. She was about 4 years old, and her brother and her cousin were with her, my two grandsons. All I had was the change, you know, that I saved over the year, you know. So they took the loot upstairs and divided it among themselves. And that was the biggest joy. And while they were up there, they decided to give me a name. Come on. Yeah, you know, said, what are we going to call it? And they came up with Pop Pop. Come on. You got to enjoy this life we have. It's so short. Narcotics Anonymous has allowed me to enjoy this life, enjoy my family, my brothers and my sisters, enjoy all of you without any strings. I just come in here and just smile. I can smile all day. I love coming to conventions because every time I see somebody I know, somebody I don't know, and we just hug each other, and I just smile, you know. And it does something because it makes me want to come back. And if I want to come back, I want to come back clean. You know, I want to come back clean, you know. You know, I want to come back to the place that our common welfare is, that we can stay clean one day at a time. You know, we stay the course. There's a group called, you might hear about in somewhere, called the Washingtonians. who they call the Baltimoreans. And what they did, they were probably the first group of people who tried to be abstinent from all mind-altering, mood-changing substances, about six or seven of them. And what happened, they started a group, and what they did was, well, they got together and talked and said, well, maybe, just maybe, if we meet every week, we can help each other stay clean. And it's lasted for a while and grew faster than Narcotics Anonymous. They didn't have people, but they lost lost where they were going to go. They had speakers like Abraham Lincoln. See, they lost their purpose. Abraham Lincoln said, I don't drink. I don't use, so I don't know how to help you, you know. Whatever y'all doing is working, so keep doing it. And that's what I do here. Keep doing what I'm doing. I keep coming back, keep going to meetings. You know, don't leave before the miracle. So important. Guy named Tom, old Tom, he's at Second Step meeting. And he's a predecessor. And at the end of the meeting, he said something that was very important to me that kind of turned me around in the early years of my recovery, because I was ready to quit and walk out the door because I didn't know what to do anymore. And at the time, I didn't have a sponsor. And he said, stop asking God for things and ask God what you can do for him. And if anything you can do for God is to walk your life in the spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous that you find in these 12 steps and 12 traditions. You know, that's what I found for me that works for me. If I keep the focus on that, I'm not perfect. I don't have a perfect program. You know, I do have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have a network. I got maybe more than one home group. I got groups I go to on a regular basis that know me, who understand when I'm going through something, that they're there for me. They put their arm around me and tell me they love me. Or they give me some help. They give me some suggestions that might help me with it. I'm going through a lot now. We go through things in life and living life on life's terms. But it doesn't mean I had to pick up and use, you know. I just went through 4 years, and I went through 4 years of pain. I had three knee operations. I had three knee operations. 1 year I had a neck operation on my neck. I had an operation on my back. This is in less than a year. I had an operation on my shoulders. Before then, I also had a knee replacement in that year. And after that, 1 month after I had a knee replacement, and I tore two other ligaments in that knee. I was in so much pain, and I'm talking about prescription drugs. I'm talking about for 4 years I was on anything you can name in a prescription drug that a doctor would give you. But this program helped me get through that. The people in these rooms helped me get through that. I was in such a depressed state. Because the drugs took me there. It took me back, and I started feeling like I was using again. I started feeling that same way inside, and I ain't like myself at all. And I found myself not talking to people right, you know, and thinking about other things that maybe I don't need to think about. But the people in this room, my sponsor, came to my help, came to my aid, and he said, James, you're going through depression. You're going to go through this while you're coming down off all that medicine. Well, when I was coming down off all that medicine, that's like going through withdrawals all over again. And when I came down, I was having such a problem. He met one of my network on the street and said, James needs your help. It's funny how this program works. That person immediately called me on the phone and walked me through what I needed to do. Now, I don't know why I'm getting so emotional about it. But I was so close to going back out. It scared me. I will never want that fear again. And that's what I'm saying. I never want to feel that way again. I don't want to feel useless, no good, unworthy, you know, not even to myself. Yeah. Never want to go there again. It's too nice being out here. It says here today, when we share with tears in our eyes, when we choke up and can't talk at all, these are the times when our gratitude speaks most clearly. We share our gratitude directly from our hearts with the hearts others hear and understand. Our gratitude speaks eloquently. Though our words may not. My name is James. I'm an addict. Thanks for listening.